from the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, a visit to the southern border and a look at a lawsuit to force schools to involve parents in their child's decisions. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and homeschool dad. This week, Washington Watch Live host and Family Research Council President Tony Perkins was traveling, but on Tuesday of this week, Tony called in to guest host Sarah Perry to talk about what he saw at the border on a visit there with a group of clergy from Southern California. Here's FRC Action's Director of Partnerships, Sarah Perry.
Tony, it feels great to say welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you, Sarah, and thanks for filling in. You always do a great job, so I know the microphone is in good hands when I'm not
Thank
in.
You. Well, I want to ask you a question that I am as compelled by as I think our listeners will be, which is, does the reality of the situation at the southern border match the narrative we are being fed in the mainstream media? Fresh off the ground as you are, tell me what your insights are.
No, not at all. In fact, Sarah, this is the second time I've gone to the border. The first time several months ago, last year, I went, and what I saw was so inconsistent with what I had heard that, you know, I began to probe more, and then some pastors asked me, hey, Tony, can you take us to the border? Because, you know, our people are hearing that, you know, this administration lacks compassion and we're doing all this stuff on the border. We'd like to see it for ourselves. And so that's what precipitated the trip. I took about 15 or so pastors from California to the San Diego sector of the border yesterday. But Sarah, here's what's happened. There was at the peak in May of last year, when there were the caravans coming to the border, and there was this idea that they could continue to manipulate the process. There were those coming into the country illegally. And a snapshot at the moment was that, quite frankly, we were overwhelmed on the border, and so they didn't have the facilities for that. Never was created to handle thousands of people, when on a normal day they'll get hundreds, not thousands. Now they've changed policies, and they've increased infrastructure. In fact, one of the things we saw yesterday was the wall, the barrier that's being built all along the southern border. I saw it in the El Paso sector. I now saw it in the San Diego sector. It's going up. The Border Patrol agents are saying it works. What it does is it drives people to the legitimate ports of entry if they have a legal reason to be here or they want to apply for asylum. They can come through that process. But on top of that, Sarah, the president, in negotiating with the president of Mexico, has helped alleviate a lot of the pressure by the Mexican government agreeing to put troops on the southern border, on their side of the border, and also to establish a system by where those coming for asylum come to this country, file the paperwork, they go back to Mexico, they wait for their court date, and they come in, as opposed to what was happening before.
Right.
They would come, be here, apply for asylum, and then be let loose in the country and never show back up for their court date. So bottom line is this, Sarah. The president, the policies of the Trump administration are working to stem the tide of illegal immigration at the border. Is it fixed? No. There's still a problem, but they've made great headway in spite of a Congress working against them.
Well, and the border wall itself, obviously the subject of great debate, and we've been fed a ton of imagery of the most left-wing extremes by our Democratic detractors who are in the House. Tell me, in your estimation, whether you believe this physical structure is actually going to do the job.
Yeah, it actually is, and the agents say that it is, and what happened before is we had where there were barriers, you know, some of it was mesh fencing, and it was about, in some cases, 8 feet high. What they're actually putting up is a double-walled barrier with, kind of neutral ground in between that is 30 feet high. And they're saying, you know, there's just a psychological effect of trying to climb over something that's 30 feet high. Number right. one, it's difficult to do. But two, he said they've had a few that have tried it. They got to the top and said, you know what, I'm not so sure I want to do this. And so they had to call for help. But the reality is it is working. But, again, it's not going to solve everything. We have an underlying problem in our immigration law. We've not had the comprehensive immigration reform. In fact, we've had none. The president, again, despite the opposition from Congress, from the House, from the Democratic Party, is putting up the physical barrier. He found a way to do it. He's doing it. It's working. Now, the administration is also soon going to be rolling out a comprehensive immigration reform package that fixes some of the underlying problems that we have, because our system is not working and it's not fair. But again, what we've seen in this administration is America first. And so, yes, we're going to let people into the country, but it's got to be good for America. There got to be people that want to come to this country to make it a better country, be a part of making America great, and not be a part of pulling America apart.
So we got about a minute left before the break, but we're going to hold over until the next segment. I want to talk a little bit about the great op-ed that you wrote talking about the American rule of law. That was a year ago. It was pretty prescient when it comes to what is actually happening at the border. And it harkens to some principles that I would love to talk with you about after the break. And I've got another story that I think you're going to have some thoughts on. So those of you who are listening, stick with us, and we'll continue our discussion with Tony Perkins right after the break on Washington Watch.
What other trips to Israel can you take that combines walking where Jesus walked with meeting today's Israeli leaders? This is Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council, inviting you to spend an incredible and life-changing 9 days in Israel with me, General Jerry Boykin, and former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann from June the 2nd through the 12th. We'll stand in the ancient ruins of synagogues where Jesus preached, worship on the Sea of Galilee, walk the streets of Jerusalem, stand on the Mount of Olives, and have communion at the Garden Tomb. You'll meet Israeli leaders who will share about Israel's intelligence and defense systems and brief you on foreign policy. As one of our former travelers said, quote, the worship, spiritual, and geopolitical understanding that FRC contributes to the trip makes it an experience not to be missed. So join us June the 2nd through the 12th for this unique experience. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
What are you reading this winter? Looking for timely and original commentary on human dignity, marriage, and religious liberty? We've got you covered at FRCblog.com. The content on our blog is written by our policy experts, FRC staff, as well as outside contributors. Read about a wide variety of topics like crimes in the criminal state of China, how Game of Thrones mainstreamed sexual exploitation, transgender regret, the rise of the detransitioners, and many more. Stand for truth by staying informed at FRCblog.com.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. This is Sarah Perry sitting in for Tony Perkins, and I've got him on the line. We're talking illegal immigration, fresh off of his visit, his second visit to the southern border. And Tony, last year you wrote a fabulous op-ed in the Washington Times about the need to protect America's national home. This ran a year ago and really set up the discussion for where we're having now, because your discussion, your examination of what makes this nation unique, what makes it excellent, I think really bears some expansion. So really, in your estimation, this is a question about the rule of law that separates us from other nations, isn't it?
It absolutely is, Sarah, and that's what makes America attractive. I mean, why are all these people coming to America? They were coming during the years of President Obama, when there was the moral implosion in the country, the economy was on the rocks. Mm-hmm. They were still coming. Why? It's because America is still, even at its worst, is better than most places in the world because of the rule of law. And this is the irony of this. Those that are coming illegally, and it's like, it's for, this applies to so many things. When we want something enough to destroy the characteristics that make it unique, it's no longer unique. And so that's what, when we break the rule of law, when we deny the rule of law, we tear down what makes America unique and special and the blessing that it is to the world. And so it's essential that we protect that rule of law. And it's fascinating in the conversation with the border agents yesterday. And by the way, many of these men and women are believers. You know, I'm not going to say all of them are, but I've encountered many on the border who are believers. And they take great pride in their work, as we all should as believers. We're to do everything into the glory of God. They are there to do a job, and that is to uphold the laws of this country when it comes to people coming in the country illegally. But they're also burdened with compassion. And so this idea that we've got these people who are mistreating people on the border, I listened to the stories. In fact, one who was in close contact with the agents that was present when OAC said that they were making them drink out of toilets, there was just completely opposite. That was never said. Yeah. And so she corrected that narrative yesterday when we were talking about this, that, look, that was never said. That kind of stuff, it hurts us because we are torn by the families coming into this country, what they're going through, what we see, the trafficking. And many of them even volunteer on their own time to work with ministries that help trafficked people, that work with those that are being sex trafficked. And so, you know, they bear a burden, and they're doing their very best. They're upholding what makes America great: law, justice, but also compassion and mercy. And that's one of the things in our system that has to be fixed. In our, you know, I've advocated with the president, with this administration, to make sure that we have asylum. Those seeking refuge because of persecution can find it, but they can't be a loophole. And historically, that's been a loophole: people to come into the country claiming that, then disappearing into the shadows of society. So I commend this administration on what they're trying to do. They're making progress, but we still have a ways to go.
Yes, yes, we do. I heard you mention earlier, and this is a perfect segue into a story I want to get your opinion on, about compromising the character of something that is great ultimately destroys the fabric of who it is or what it is. And news has just broken that the Boy Scouts will, in fact, be filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. They simply cannot meet the onslaught of sexual abuse allegations and settle with all of the victims because there are so many. And this would seem to me that it's sort of a natural result of moral compromise. What's your take on that?
Well, you are absolutely right. It is a case study in the effects of moral compromise. In fact, this first time I'll say this publicly, but actually working on a book on the Boy Scouts as a case study in compromise and where it leads. Because it is a case study that all organizations should look at. Look, it's 110 years old, a storied institution.
Yes.
That went all the way to the United States Supreme Court to be able to define their own membership and to protect that. And they won. They won at the Supreme Court only to compromise in the culture because of the external pressure. And you can never appease those who want to transform you into something that you are not, and to reject and abandon your core values. And that's exactly what they did. And they are not even a shell of who they used to be. As they've lost their membership, they're no longer Boy Scouts, they're Scouts, because they allow girls into the Scouts. And so their whole core mission to train up young boys through that journey into manhood, giving them those core moral values, all that's been lost. And the real loser, Sarah, are the boys of America.
You can find out more about our efforts to defend faith, family, and freedom in Washington, D.C. and around the country when you visit TonyPerkins.com. We'd also encourage you to support our ongoing efforts with a gift when you visit TonyPerkins.com and click on the donate link at the bottom of the page. That's TonyPerkins.com.
In the U.S., the rate of chemical abortions is at an all-time high. This increase is being driven by the abortion industry, which wants abortion pills available through the pharmacy in the mail, making do-it-yourself abortions the future of the abortion industry. Abortion advocates once claimed that legal abortion would prevent back-alley abortions, but the health complications that often result from chemical abortion are eerily similar to those of back-alley abortions. For more information, visit frc.org/chemical abortion.
Hi, this is retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, Executive Vice President for the Family Research Council. I'm inviting you to join Tony, Michelle Bachman, Ken Blackwell, and me in Israel, June 2nd through 12th. It'll be an incredible 9 days together. We'll walk where Jesus walked, from the Sea of Galilee to the streets of Jerusalem. You'll hear from Israeli defense, political, and religious leaders about Israel's security, foreign policy, and geopolitical landscape of the region, and God's work in the land among the Jews and the Arabs. I personally will brief you about the strategic importance of the Golan Heights, and I'll give you a history of Masada when we get up onto that plateau. And you'll have the opportunity to have one-on-one conversations with the leadership of FRC. This isn't just any trip to Israel, it's an inside look at the nation that is at the very center of human history. Join us. To book your spot, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
We all need to be lectured sometimes. Family Research Council's new podcast features selected talks by top thinkers from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast podium takes on tough issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Listen with us to the lecture, then stick around afterward as we break down the content. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. On Tuesday, parents in Wisconsin filed a lawsuit against a school district for encouraging their children to change their gender identities without parental consent. Joining guest host Sarah Perry to talk about it is Luke Berg, deputy counsel for the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty.
Luke, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Well, this is an important case. I mentioned this a lot. I am the mother of three children and a foster son. All four are in public schools. I have to tell you that this is the kind of thing that makes the hair stand on end. I am also a Wisconsin native, and my first year of college was spent at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and I know that Madison is the locus of some very liberal thinking. So this particular school district policy was so bad, these parents joined together. Your institute has represented them, but not before you all sent a demand letter to the school district back in December. So can you tell us what the demand letter had to say?
Yeah, I mean, so we what we ultimately want to do is get rid of the policy, change the policy, and require parents to be notified before a significant change like this happens at school. And so, you know, we're not just setting out to file a lawsuit. So we sent the district a letter and set forth our whole argument. It was written more like a brief than a letter, honestly, in the hopes that the district would be willing to change the policy when it saw the problem with it. Unfortunately, the district politely declined. And so here we are, and now we file a lawsuit.
So tell me precisely what the policy includes, because as I was reading through it, I was really fairly gobsmacked at precisely how much deception is taking place in this school district. It really goes above and beyond. This isn't just a failure to inform. This is really an active attempt at hiding these particular trans-identifying students' thoughts and actions and any inclination of gender dysphoria. So what are some of the policy's inclusions?
Yeah, so the policy allows children of any age to change their gender identity at school by selecting a new name and pronouns to be used at school without any parental involvement whatsoever. And then the policy actually prohibits staff from notifying parents about this unless the child consents. And in some cases, even requires staff to actively deceive parents by using one name at school and then another when the parents show up. Schools require parental permission for almost everything, athletics, taking medication at school, field trips, and the like. And so, you know, this is completely anomalous that the school district would take as significant and controversial of an issue as this and say, this is one issue that we're going to allow students to make a decision totally on their own, and we're actually going to help them hide this from their parents if you want.
Which just goes to show you how politicized the environment is around the notion of gender identity and sexual orientation. But gender identity, it's hit us like a tidal wave, and this is a very small cabal of activist individuals and organizations who are pushing a hard left whole cloth abandonment of biological reality, but specifically as concerns these kids. And this is where I am, I think, most upset as a parent. It is an attempt to funnel them through some kind of a pipeline of transition and acceptance. And one of the things that you cited when you actually sent this demand and then the subsequent filing of the lawsuit was an affidavit that was actually from an individual who's from the American Psychiatric Association, if I have that citation right, Dr. Stephen Levine, who's a fellow there at the APA, who said that social transition of children is experimental and exposes vulnerable children to dangerous, lifelong physical, social, and mental health risks. And not a short affidavit. 50 whole pages. So you really went, I mean, this, it's incredibly well argued. And again, common sense. I can't believe I'm having the kind of conversations I'm having these days with individuals fighting these sorts of policies. Holy common sense. And all of the evidence was there. What was the response that you got from the school district?
I mean, well, the response was pretty minimal. It was a two-paragraph sort of politely declined to change our policy. You know, but to comment on what you said, I think the school district has clearly bought into the idea that this is a rights issue, that children have a right to, you know, pick whatever gender they want to be, no matter what their parents think. And I think that really misses the underlying mental health and medical realities. You know, there's a whole lot of studies showing that for the vast majority of children who experience gender dysphoria, it goes away. It's like 80 to 90%.
Absolutely.
And so there's a lot of mental health professionals, Dr. Levine included, who think that if you encourage children to transition or enable a transition at a young age, it may actually cause they may reinforce the beliefs and cause a transgender identity to persist when it otherwise would have gone away. You know, and I think most people can agree it would be better, if possible, for a child to learn to find comfort with their body. And so, you know, the district may actually be doing harm to children by facilitating a transition without the parents being involved, without any sort of mental health professionals being involved to evaluate the child, to provide recommendations and the like. So that's part of what we're arguing to the court.
So I don't think that every parent fully understands that they have constitutionally protected rights to the education, protection, instruction, medical treatment of their own minor children. So explain a little bit about how this policy really circumvents their guaranteed rights in multiple ways. And as an ancillary, are you seeing more and more of this in the work that you do there at the Institute?
Yeah, I mean, there's a long line of cases. There's a lot of cases that have said that parents have a right to direct the upbringing of their children. And, you know, what courts have focused on is parents have a right to be involved in and to make significant decisions that affect their children. And so, you know, we think this violates that constitutional right. But it also comes close to violating a whole lot of state and federal laws. You know, state law requires consent from both parents before a child can legally change their name. Federal law requires parents to be involved to change records. This isn't a legal name change or changing records. So the district managed to thread that needle, but obviously it's allowing children to make a significant change without parental involvement. So this is the kind of thing that clearly parents need to be involved in.
So you've only recently filed February 18th, if memory serves, and you've filed a motion to proceed using pseudonyms. Now, this is February 18th. Today is the 19th. So when you do eventually receive a response by the school district, are you anticipating that finally the institution of legal action on behalf of multiple families is going to be enough to incite change, much needed change in the school district?
I mean, I hope so. You know, we sent the letter in the hopes that the district would just change the policy. Obviously, that didn't work. But, you know, filing a lawsuit is just the first shot. And if they look at all of the filings, the expert report and the extensive brief that we did, they might say, yeah, this is actually right. I think the policy should change, and maybe they make some changes. Now, I'm not optimistic about that, but, you know, we would totally be amenable to working with the district if they'd be willing to change it. But if not, I think we're pretty confident a court will see the flaws in this policy and order them to change it. So they can take whatever approach they want. They can wait for a court order, or they can do it voluntarily.
Now, there's a teacher there who is in the same Madison School District who is trying to use, he's fighting very hard to use the student girls' bathroom. Is that in any way related to the arguments that you made here about the kind of environment that the school district is promoting for these kids, which is to say, clearly an unsafe one?
Yeah, I mean, we're not involved in that exact issue, and we're not challenging that exact thing, but it certainly shows the culture in the school district. You know, one of the things we point out in our complaint is that the policy itself says Madison schools will strive to disrupt the gender binary, and they'll do this in a variety of ways. So, you know, the school district is actively teaching kids from kindergarten on that they have a right to pick whatever gender they want. They might be a child born in the wrong body. Just think that's dangerous to be teaching young kids.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.